Welcome to Pour It Out. I'm Brandy.
And I'm Haley. We are super excited for episode 12 to welcome Emmy Hartsfield as a guest for this episode. Emmy is a nurse practitioner that owns a private practice specializing in gut health. We have had this episode planned with Emmy for months and thought that a health episode for the new year was the perfect time to have her on, especially with the Make America Healthy Again initiative beginning in 2025. So Emmy, welcome to Pour It Out.
Hello, I'm so excited to be with you.
Yes, Emmy, thank you so much for joining us. So we start off each episode by telling our listeners what we're pouring it out with. So what are you pouring it out with tonight?
So I am pouring it out with Spindrift.
Ooh, can't go wrong there.
Nope, our favorite. It's
like we've said before that Haley is a seltzer connoisseur, and Spindrift falls high on our list.
So. Yeah, it's very high on my list.
Absolutely.
It took me, I'm not going to lie, it took me a little while to get on the Spindrift train because I was so used to, I drank LaCroix religiously. And when I tried Spindrift for the first time, it was, it tastes so flat compared to LaCroix. Like it's not as carbonated that I was like really unsure about it at first. But then once I started drinking it, I was like, oh, like I don't want anything else.
Right. Yeah. Well, it's real. Like it tastes real. Like it's just carbonated water and lemon juice. So can't go wrong. Yeah.
Some of the flavors are really good too. So, Haley, do you want to share what we're pouring it out with tonight? Because it's a little exciting.
It's a little exciting. I kind of just pulled it out of thin air. I'm not going to lie. I posted it on our Instagram as well. I threw together a little alcohol-free sangria for Christmas week. It's the free wine brand. I tagged them in the post and it's just two bottles of that, rosemary, orange slices, and fresh cranberries.
So good. Very, very good. So okay. Amy, before we jump into our questions, we would love for our listeners to get to know you. So if you could just tell us a little bit about yourself and your background and what you do.
Yes, I would love to. So I'm a mom of three boys. I feel like that falls high on my list of what I do. But I am a nurse practitioner, family nurse practitioner. I worked in the clinic for 12 years. Love family practice, love what I do, but was really discouraged with the direction that medicine was going. And, you know, talking to women, it was all female providers, so we saw a lot of women. And, you know, they would come in with complaints and I'd say, your labs are normal and I'm sorry you can't lose weight. I'm sorry you have brain fog, and could never really like help anybody. So I went out on my own. I started studying functional medicine. I realized that I was really good at helping people lose weight. And I started working on what I call my method, which we can get into a little bit later, but it's really, you know, how do we heal our gut, but also make this practical? And that leads to sustainable weight loss and, you know, just thinking about chronic disease in general. And it's so rewarding. I can't even imagine being back in the clinic at this point. So that's what I do now.
I think that social media has helped a lot, but I think over the last, like, probably what, 5 years, like, functional medicine and gut health has become so much more talked about than I feel like it was. So we are really excited to have you on and learn a little bit more about it.
Yeah, awesome. I love talking about it. So that's perfect.
January is obviously a time that a lot of people reset. Dry January is a thing for a lot of people. You know, we talk a lot about mocktails on the podcast, but then we also drink socially. So for people that are participating in Dry January, are there any mocktails that you would recommend that aren't packed full of sugar? And if people are still choosing to drink, what are some healthier options? Because I think that one of the things that people don't realize is how packed full of sugar alcohol can be. Even if you think that you're drinking something that's like healthier, and even with mocktails, a lot of the juice options can be packed full of sugar. So is there anything that you would recommend for people that are trying to be healthier on that front?
Yes, absolutely. So I was joking before we started the podcast saying, oh, we're leading with the alcohol question. The alcohol question, don't turn it off. But I do want to just say that from the functional standpoint, alcohol affects people a lot more than we realize. And just thinking about that, it is a toxin really to every cell in our body. Now, we could say the same thing about sugar, but what we want is to make this sustainable and something that you feel like you can live life with, and telling you to never eat sugar and never drink alcohol is obviously not, you know, going to work. So one of my favorite mocktails is to use Apothecary. And I don't know if you can tag them in this, Haley, but Apothecary has different tinctures. It has things like L-theanine and some different herbs that actually do help kind of calm you down. I love to combine that with Spindrift. And another thing that I like to do, even in like a carb setting, is to do half of the real stuff and half some substitute. So thinking about just cutting down on the quantity of alcohol. So a lot of times I'll make a mocktail with half red wine, half Spindrift over some ice, and do something like rosemary, blackberries, you know, something like that in it. So you're still having, you know, what you want, you know, the alcohol, but you are reducing the quantity. I do this a lot with rice, and like I'll do half rice, half cauliflower rice, or half pasta, half zoodles, just to give it some volume, but then you don't feel like you're missing out, that you're still reducing the amount. So I'd say Apothecary is my favorite, doing anything with Spindrift, and then maybe just doing half the amount of wine, you know, with something like Spindrift is great.
Such a good idea too, to kind of give you the best of both worlds.
Yes.
So whenever you don't feel like you're depriving yourself, mm-hmm. and you still get to have that treat of red wine or white wine or whatever mm-hmm. it is of your choice, but you're just not consuming so much of it that it's going to affect you adversely,
right?
With all that sugar and everything. That's such a good idea.
I do find that with this conversation, and even with a lot of food, like a lot of it is habit. Sometimes we just want to hold a pretty drink in our hand or hold a wine glass while we're cooking dinner. And it's not even about what exactly is in it. It's just habit. Like, it's just the act of doing that that helps us wind down. So trying to think through, what are some other things that I can pour in this glass? I love to put my Spindrift in the freezer for like 20 to 30 minutes before I have it. It's really, honestly, like I used to be a total Diet Coke addict. And it's just the act of like opening the can and hearing the sound and taking the first sip that's like, you know, you just want it. Your brain craves that. But it's not necessarily the Diet Coke that it craves. It's just, you know, everything surrounding it. So alcohol and wine.
No, that's such a good point too, because I leaned into mocktails a lot more last year because Brandy and I have had this conversation so many times. So I live alone and I love to cook, and I'm not a big drinker, but it's so easy to be like, oh, I'm cooking dinner, I'm going to pour myself a glass of wine. Like, and I may not even finish that one glass, but you get to the end of the week and you're like, well, crap, I did that almost every day this week.
Yeah.
Or then you get to the end of the month and you start thinking back and it's like, oh man, like I really need to cut back. So I last year really started kind of leaning heavier into the mocktails for that exact same reason. Like I'm cooking and I want to feel like I'm having something, but it can't be alcohol 7 days a week.
You want to hold a drink in your hand. You want it to be in a pretty glass. You want it to be something other than water. It's just that like wine that winds you down almost mm-hmm. more than the alcohol itself. Well, so staying on the drink theme, one of the things you post about a lot, and honestly, so do we, is coffee. So coffee creamers can be so deceiving because a lot of them are marked as healthy, but they're actually not. So what are some things to look out for when you're choosing coffee creamer options that are better for you, but taste great too?
That coffee creamers are one of my favorite things to talk about. I will say I have a great coffee creamer guide. I have several posts on Instagram, and if you comment, you know, the keyword, it'll send it to you, and I'm happy to send it to anybody. But number one, I wish that so many people were not afraid of dairy. I think that over the years, dairy, in fact, a patient one time said, you know, you're not supposed to drink milk from a cow. And I'm like, who said that? So, you know, we've kind of bought the low calorie nut milk conversation for a long time. But, you know, sometimes dairy affects people, but it doesn't affect everybody. So don't just take a blanket statement that dairy is, you know, you're lactose intolerant or whatever. If you're not, and you do find with dairy, I like using milk or even half and half as creamer. Of course, I would like for it to be grass-fed if possible, but where we run into trouble with the nut milks is most of them have a lot of gums and fillers. So they use very few nuts. They're very low calorie and they put a lot of extra stuff in them that you or I could not make at home. Okay. So just kind of thinking through, low calories, not better. How many ingredients are in this? Do I recognize the ingredients? Are there gums? I love the Elmhurst brand. They make like a cashew milk, almond milk, oat milk. They're in the milk section, not in the creamer section, but they do also have some creamers with like some vanilla. And then Almond Milk is another good brand. So just kind of looking at, do I recognize the ingredients? How many ingredients? And don't be afraid of dairy unless you know that you actually have a problem with dairy.
No, I think that that's such an important thing to talk about, because that's one of the things that I told Brandy when we were talking about having you on, was that, for lack of a better term, like myths was something mm-hmm. that I really wanted us to talk about, because you're right, like non-dairy became such a thing, but why did it become such a thing? And Brandy and I were both really big on oat milk when it came out, until mm-hmm. honestly, it might have even been a post you made, Emmy, where it was talking about how inflammatory oat milk is, but nobody knows it. It's like, it's non-dairy. It has to be healthy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. And I'm not a huge fan of oat milk, just because, you know, I do work with a lot of females with hormone imbalance and things like that. And, you know, oats are carbs, and we could get into all of that. But Elmhurst does make an oat milk if you really like the flavor. But, you know, it kind of came with the whole vegetarian burgers and we don't need to eat red meat. And it's like, I don't know where all that came from. And I think that we're going to see more this year that like red meat is not necessarily bad. And the Beyond burgers are probably 100 times worse for you than if you were to just eat a burger, you know? So dairy, I don't know where that came from. It certainly could be inflammatory in some situations and for certain people, but overwhelmingly, we don't need to be afraid of it like we have been.
I think too, as a few years ago, I had some chronic illness and some health conditions that needed to be addressing. And so I started looking at what I was putting in my body more so than I ever have before. And coffee to me is like a ritual in the morning. So I got up and I froth my creamer, and I have, Haley does the same thing. So we're just very like coffee people, coffee oriented. And one day we both loved oat creamer. And so we used the same one. And one day I turned it around and I was reading the ingredients and I was like, I cannot pronounce more than half of what's in here. And I was like, that needs to be something that we look at, because that's what we're starting our day off. That's the very first thing that we're choosing to fuel our bodies with.
Which, and it's so deceiving too, because you think that you're being health conscious. Oh, it's dairy free. It's gluten free. It's this free. It's that free. But then right, when you actually turn around and read the label, it's like, well, wait a minute, I can't pronounce any of this. But you feel like a little bit misled, because the front labels tell you it's free from all of this stuff and it's not actually healthy.
Right. Yeah. No, I the food marketing companies, I mean, that's a big issue. But anytime I see something on a food package, it says like fat free or keto or like anything, you know, plant based, and like that is automatically a red flag. That means that you're having to sell me a product that did not come from something that I could grow or, you know, kill for myself. I mean, you're trying to sell this to me. So that's, yeah, it's very deceiving and really infuriating, quite honestly, because I do see so many patients and clients who want to make better choices, and it's just overwhelming.
It is very overwhelming. And that is, I think that that's a really good segue into this next question. And something that we really want to talk to you about are ingredients and reading labels, which is something that Brandy and I are both super passionate about. So for people that are just beginning their health journey, what advice would you give them when they are learning to read labels and be ingredient conscious?
So kind of back to what I just said, I'm very against food fear. So I want patients and clients, and I want you to be informed, but I do think that especially with social media kind of, you know, there's just so much information, it's overwhelming as far as what is what, and that can almost lead to like paralysis over, well, what do I eat and what is okay? So obviously, I mean, the standard American diet, most Americans are very deficient in servings of fruits and vegetables a day. So if you can find a food that doesn't even have a label to look at and decipher, that is best. Okay. So foods without a label first, then we're going to look at how many ingredients does it have. Notice that nothing I will say in this whole section has anything to do with calories. So how many ingredients are there? Can I pronounce them? Can I go get that ingredient off the shelf and make it myself? And how many steps did this product have to go to make it to me? And that's going to be something that we'll talk about a little bit more as we go. But also just kind of thinking through, like, we want nutrition advice to be practical. So in my mind, I have some ingredients that are a hard no. Like if I see them in the nutrition label, I'm automatically putting it back. And then there are some that is a more case-by-case basis as far as, okay, is, you know, that would be things like natural flavors, seed oils. There's a lot of conversation about. There are a lot of convenience foods that help a lot of people stay on track that do have those things. So we kind of have to weigh like a cost-benefit analysis. But if something has an artificial sweetener like sucralose or aspartame or any hydrogenated oil, the word hydrogenated anywhere in the ingredient list, I'm automatically putting it back. Then we get into more of like the, okay, is this going to keep me from eating something worse? And again, like a case-by-case basis, and that would be things like natural flavors and seed oils. There are a lot of functional practitioners that are going to tell you that that is like an absolute no. And I think that, again, we have to make this practical and sustainable, and we're busy at the end of the day. So, you know, we've got to make it work. But I don't want you to have food fear. I don't want you to be paralyzed trying to figure out what to eat. So that's kind of how I approach a label. I don't look at calories at all. You know, there's been this whole protein push for quite a while. So the protein content of food is important. That's something that, you know, we could get into. But overall, reading labels, foods without a label are the best. Foods with less ingredients are next. And then are they recognizable would be the third.
I know some of the big conversations that have been trending recently about seed oils, talking about just how difficult it is to find products that don't have seed oils in them. And once you start paying attention to it, you do notice just how prevalent they are in our food and processed, our processes. And kind of the same thing with natural flavoring. I've found almost everything that you pick up off the shelf, that's like the last ingredient, but it's still in there. So I do think that both of those are tricky to find anything that's not on that outer rim of the grocery store to kind of fit that bill. So, and you do have to have some practicality if you're busy or especially a mom or have a family too. So I think finding things that kind of balance and create that balance for your family is important too.
Yes. So if at all possible, I'm avoiding those things, but almost all protein bars and even some like easy protein, just like keep in the freezer options have it. So, you know, it is a balance. And I think that overall, if we cut out as much as we can, and then when we're in a pinch, we have it and we don't freak out over it or think, oh my goodness, I can't, you know, that's balance to me. That's food freedom. And that, you know, is what I want.
That food fear, I think creating that instead of, well, I don't have anything on hand, I'm just going to go grab whatever I can from the Circle K, having something that's maybe not the best option, but a better option on hand can kind of save you in a pinch too, I think, which is important to stay on track. So while the new year is a time to reset, we all, like we just talked about, live extremely busy lives. So what are some staple grocery items that you like to keep on hand when you need to throw together a quick meal, something in a pinch?
Yes. So speaking of seed oils, some of these things that I mentioned are going to have them, and I'll try to give you a heads up, but one thing that I love that I get from Costco that does not have seed oils, it's cooked in avocado oil, it's the brand Pura Vida, and they're frozen vegetables. So again, going back to, all right, I have a lot of my clients count servings of fruits and vegetables. So having a bag of frozen vegetables that I can just quickly heat up on the stovetop with whatever protein I want is huge, because I do think that when you're in a pinch, fruits and vegetables are one of the first things that are neglected. So I always keep those. They have several different types. They have root vegetables and like Mediterranean vegetables, but I love those. Tuna is a really good option. I know that some people don't like tuna, and if you don't, you do not have to eat it by any means. But safe catch tuna is one of my favorites. It's got tons of protein. It's very low in fat. It tastes great. It's all like pregnancy associated, mercury tested. So that is one of my go-tos. And then I usually always have a bag of, you know, frozen wild caught salmon, because you can pop that in the air fryer even without thawing it and cook it. Also the Just Bare chicken. I love those and my kids enjoy that. Even things like Applegate lunch meat, you can do like an adult Lunchable with the Applegate lunch meat, some carrots, celery, olives, avocado, and that makes a great just like grab and go lunch. And then we always keep the Jones Farm chicken sausage on hand that we heat up in the morning. That's a great protein option if you don't, you know, have time to cook eggs or something like that. But those are all great things. One of my favorites is a salmon burger. It's Trident. It does have seed oil. I keep it in the freezer. I use it in a pinch. I try to use the frozen wild caught salmon when I can, but when I need to have the burger, I have.
I think that's something me and Haley talk about regularly too, is one, coming up with meal ideas, mm-hmm. and then also too, just utilizing the freshness of produce and mm-hmm. meat and everything, because we'll be like, well, we had good intentions, but we forgot to take the chicken out of the freezer and defrost. Or so it is a little bit harder and requires some more planning when you're utilizing fresh food.
Yeah. Yeah. And I really got on board with Costco frozen vegetables last year because I, especially living alone, like to Brandy's point, a lot of my fresh produce would go bad before I had the opportunity to cook it. So it's like, not only is it going bad, you're also wasting money. Mm-hmm. And I started learning a lot about frozen vegetables and how honestly, sometimes they're even healthier for you because they've been frozen very quickly after they've been harvested.
Yeah. Even like berries, I love getting frozen berries and adding those to a shake because in a berries, I feel like are expensive and mm-hmm. they go bad quickly. But yeah, I know. I love having frozen things, you know, and getting back from a trip and travel and thinking, okay, I haven't gone shopping, but that's not an excuse that I can't, you know, I still have some things that I can, you know, eat and stay on track. So yeah. I do think that overwhelmingly with Pinterest and, you know, different pages on Instagram with recipes, like most people overthink it a lot and they sit down and they plan 5 new recipes and get all these ingredients and make like one thing, you know, and it's like, we need to simplify this and it does not need to be this complicated. And that's really where people get amazing results is because they're able to, you know, make it part of their lives. It doesn't have to be like this big production every week.
Well, okay. I think if it is simplified, then you're more likely to stick with it in the long run too. So.
Yes. And that's exactly where I was about to go, like on the simplified front. Is there anything that you found, Emmy, when you like went on this health journey for yourself that you have been able to implement as a routine day in and day out that helped all of this like become an easier lifestyle for you?
Yeah. So I followed plans in the past that, you know, gave you food lists and these are approved foods and not approved foods. And I'm very type A. So like at some point that structure was great in my mind, but also I like, you know, if I didn't have all day Sunday to meal prep, I was like, I couldn't make it through the week, you know? Yeah. So when I developed my method, I'm like, okay, there needs to be no food that's off limits, because also the first thing that my mind did when I thought I couldn't have something was like, want it even more. It's like telling the 2-year-old not to touch the breakable item. It's like, okay, I really want that now. So being able to eat any food and make it work within my budget based on whatever my goal is, and the same thing for my clients, is really what simplified it for me. And then just, you know, having these staples on hand and kind of putting them in rotation and not feeling like I had to cook five new things every week and meal prep all day Sunday is really, you know, it made a big difference.
I think that that's a lot of what it is people are overwhelmed, and they're overwhelmed by, yes, what they see on social media, because everybody's telling you that you have to do the next big thing, or like the only way you're going to get this done is if you do X, Y, and Z. And it's like 10-step processes. Like nobody has time for that.
Over the last few years, especially on social media, supplements have become huge, and we're constantly spammed with ads telling you to buy the next best thing. So what are your thoughts on this? And is there anything over the counter you think is important to add into your daily routine? And I know I see these all the time on like Instagram pop-up ads, and I'll be like, do I need that? Should I incorporate that? Is this important? I don't know. Yes.
I get a lot of messages in my DMs about this. Like, what do you think about this? And so I feel very passionately about it because people are spending a lot of money on this stuff. And I have fallen in the trap. You know, it's like, so they convince you that you do need it. You know, if your hair is going to grow, you need to be on Armour or whatever, the colostrum, you know. And colostrum is great, side note, but I do feel passionately about this because more is not necessarily better. And so many people that I work with, you know, I felt like in the clinic, all I did was prescribe medicine, and now I'm trying to help people get off medicine. And I am never about trading a prescription cabinet for a supplement cabinet. So in my opinion, it's all about targeted supplements. And so a lot of these companies market these, you know, proprietary blends of all this stuff that's, you know, and it's like, you specifically may not need that. That's why I love functional testing, because I'm looking and I'm able to tell based on genetics and gut testing and hormones, like what a specific person would benefit from. But there are a few that I think that in general, I would say most people. And now I'm not saying that you should take, please consult with your doctor before you start anything new. But my top ones would be magnesium. Magnesium is responsible for over 3,000 enzymatic reactions in the body. And most of us cannot get enough in just from nutritional sources. So magnesium is at the top of my list. There are lots of different types, and it depends on if we're using it for sleep or anxiety or bowels and that sort of thing. The second one would be a B complex. And this is personal to me because I had a very complicated first pregnancy with preeclampsia. And to make a long story short, it was a deficiency of B vitamins. And when I do DNA core testing, genetic testing on my clients, I am flabbergasted at how many people have alterations on the specific panel. It affects mood, it affects sleep, hormones, miscarriages, infertility, just so many things. So a B complex, a methylated B complex would be something that I recommend for most people. And then vitamin D, and that's something that in the clinic, you know, I would check all these vitamin D levels and I'm like, gosh, why is everyone deficient in vitamin D? And it plays a big role in the body as well. If you take vitamin D, I do like to have you take it with vitamin K. So the bottle will say vitamin D3 plus K2, and that helps bring it into the bone so it can actually be absorbed. Magnesium actually helps with that as well. So that's something that, you know, you want to track levels and not just use it as a blanket statement. But overall, I'm very passionate about it being targeted and not just something general. So most of the Instagram ads are wasting your money.
Good to know, because then once you sign up for it, you're just trapped in this circle of they're going to charge you $30 every month until you figure out how to subscribe.
I've been thinking about this the other day, and I was like, if I bought every single one of these supplements that I'm spammed with, it is hundreds of, every bottle is between like $35 and $60 for a month's supply. Who can afford that?
Yeah.
No, we don't even really know what's in it.
We don't even know what's in it.
What is it doing for me? Do I need it? Maybe you do and I don't.
So
maybe.
I have a part two of that question then. One of the things that Brittany and I have even been talking about recently is exactly that. Like, what is in some of these vitamins and supplements? And like, it's, I guess my question to you would be, is it not safe to assume that all of these supplements, that even ones you can just go into the store and buy, they're not healthy for you just because it says they're a supplement.
Oh yeah, no, not at all. I mean, so none of it is, I mean, there's very little regulation. And so, especially if you're taking any other medications, you really have to be careful. You know, just, I do think that, you know, people think that because it's over the counter, it's totally safe. And that is not necessarily the case. I mean, and I see a lot of things, like I mentioned, proprietary blends, and really there's, that's a nice word and phrase, I guess, for companies to use that, like, they don't have to disclose exactly how much and what is in it. So, you know, you don't really know. And then manufacturing processes and how is it stored? And so I'm pretty picky when it comes to brands and, you know, what I recommend for people that I'm working with. And at the end of the day, more is not better.
Okay. So here's another, is it healthy question, that one of the other things over the last few years that have completely just blown up and become so popular are these healthy prebiotic sodas. So your Poppies, your Olipops, all of that. Are they okay to drink in moderation? And do they actually support gut health like they claim to?
So I like to use these almost as a bridge to wean people off actual soda, you know, Coke, that kind of thing. I would not look at these for any specific gut health benefit. Is it a better alternative? And is it a good, you know, when we're trying to break habits, it's really helpful to replace it with something healthier and kind of remove your brain's attachment to that specific habit, kind of like we were talking about with alcohol. So it can be a great tool to use as a bridge, but I definitely, I mean, your body, going back to, you know, how many steps did this have to go to make it to me? You and I can't go make Poppy or Olipop in our kitchen. Your body, your gut is going to appreciate whole food sources of probiotics and prebiotics and fiber much more than Poppy or Olipop. So again, it can be a helpful tool to wean off some things that you feel, you know, like you're having a hard time breaking the habit, but I would not turn to it for any specific health benefit.
Like a segue off from like the...
Yeah. Like, you know, if someone comes in and says, I have to drink 5 Diet Cokes a day, I'm like, okay, well, we're going to start by replacing 2 of those with something else. And I let them try a couple things and choose, you know, and we work through it that way. But I definitely would not recommend, you know, when I sit down and review gut testing with someone and we're talking about probiotics and prebiotic foods and, you know, fiber and that sort of thing, Olipop and Poppy is not on my list of things to incorporate.
Do you see during the testing, after they segue off of things like sodas and processed foods, approximately how long do you think that it takes to really see a difference, like in their blood work and in their labs and everything?
So on the testing, you know, functional testing is cost prohibitive. So I like to use clinical symptoms as a way to kind of track progress, because we wouldn't repeat functional testing for like 3 to 6 months is about the time frame that I would say, depending on what we find. But usually within a couple weeks, patients feel significantly more energy, less brain fog, less bloating. I have a lot of people that I work with, like IBS, and, you know, just kind of conditions where they slap general terms on it and say, you know, sorry. So the clinical benefit happens pretty quickly. As far as seeing it on the testing, I wouldn't recheck the test for 3 to 6 months.
It's wild to me to see our generation especially struggle with so many chronic illnesses, chronic pains, especially in the gut area, which then leads to pretty much the only thing that you can trace it back to, or one of the only things, is what we're putting in our body. And so when you start paying attention to things like the ingredients and the foods and how they're processed and what we're actually ingesting, the correlation between the two is pretty undeniable, especially if you're somebody that's young and healthy, appears young and healthy, but does struggle with IBS or some other gut issue, and it starts to affect your daily life. It can really play a role in how you view functional medicine too.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, the more, even in conventional medicine, I think that we're starting to learn so much more about the gut and the gut-brain connection, and that it's linked to everything. I mean, chronic disease, your skin, hormones, cancer, autoimmunity, which I always think is, you know, I think like 75% of new autoimmune cases are female, which blows my mind. All the GLP-1 and Ozempic conversation, you know, a lot of it goes back to what, I mean, that's all regulated in the gut. And I have seen, especially, you know, when I find yeast in gut testing, you know, sugar craving, I mean, those microbes literally send signals to your brain saying, feed me, like, I want sugar. And so a lot of times it's not behavioral. It's not lack of willpower. It's literally the microbes that are growing in your gut. And I've seen it over and over, and it blows my mind every time. You know, I've had people who were told their whole life that they have celiac, and we look at their genetics and their gut testing, and the genetics say you don't have increased risk for celiac, and it's bad bacteria growing in the gut. And when we clean it up, they can eat gluten and have no problem. I mean, so it's just bizarre. And it's gaining a lot of traction. I do think that the more we learn about it, the more we'll see, okay, this is the root, and we can wait for these chronic diseases to develop and put Band-Aid medications on them, or we can go, you know, more upstream and figure out what's really going on. And the gut is definitely where to start.
Yeah. I think that's one of the reasons that we're so excited about the Make America Healthy initiative, is because I think so many things are going to start coming to light over the next few years about these ingredients that these companies in the US have been allowed to pump into these foods that are so bad for you, that are linked to so many different illnesses and diseases. And, you know, I mean, you look at Europe and all of these other countries that have food banned lists. Mm-hmm. That's just not a thing in America. Mm-hmm. And so I think in the next few years, we are going to find out a lot about what has been allowed to be put in our foods.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I'm hopeful.
I think too, the kind of push behind that movement is a lot of moms, because I know that I have not given near as much thought as to what goes into my body as I have since having my son, what goes into his body. And because when I started doing research and found that their gut is really developed in the first couple years of life, that put so much, you know, weight on me to make the right decisions as best I could as to what he's fed and the ingredients that go in it and all that. And there's so many options out there. So, Emmy, I know that kind of at the beginning of this, you talked about how important your role is as a mom to three. So we, as busy moms, we have to eat on the go a lot. So what are some healthy snacks, protein shakes, et cetera, that you can recommend as grab and go options that we can feel good about?
So I am going to answer that question, but I want to say something just really quick as it relates to gut health, is it's not just what we're eating, but it's how we eat. So when we look at other countries that eat Mediterranean type diets, which if you ask any doctor in America what the healthiest diet for you to be on, most of them are probably going to say Mediterranean, but they're sitting down at a table. They're having conversation. They're making memories. They're eating slowly. They're eating and probably drinking a glass of wine, you know? So I think it's not just what we're eating, but how we're eating. And we're eating on the go. We're not chewing thoroughly. We're surprised that we have heartburn and constipation and can't digest our food because we don't even chew it. So even when we're on the go, I always tell my clients, even if you can't sit down and put your fork down between bites, I want you to intentionally eat slower. Think about the speed that you're eating. If you're in the car, if you're standing at the kitchen bar, feeding, you know, the kids, whatever it is, slow down, chew your food thoroughly. Think about and take in the other things that are going on and not just, you know, a lot of times we wolf something down, we don't even know what happened, and we go back for more because we don't even realize that we're scrolling our phone or the TV's on or whatever, we're in front of our computer. So there is a lot from a behavior modification standpoint as far as like how we're actually eating. So to answer your question, I am a big fan of using something like Orgain, or it's called OWYN, like the pre-made protein shakes. There are plenty of ingredients in those, and I don't want the functional police to come after me. But again, it's a cost-benefit analysis that can help you stay on track. It can get good protein in. Those are sweetened with stevia, and you can go to Tallahassee Nurseries and buy a stevia plant. Okay. You can't go buy a sucralose or an aspartame plant. Mm-hmm. And that is one reason that I do not like Fairlife. And I see a lot of people come into my program and they drink Fairlife. Fairlife has stevia, but they also have sucralose. It's extremely disruptive to the gut. It's one of the biggest causes of belly fat that I see in women. Even for diabetics, it is totally dysregulates your blood sugar. So I am not a fan of sucralose. So I don't recommend Fairlife, but Orgain and OWYN when you're in a pinch. I love the Chomps beef sticks. They're all grass-fed. They have them at Costco and any of the local grocery stores. And then don't forget about like nuts. And there are fruits that are pretty non-perishable, like take an apple with you. Even like baby carrots, throw some baby carrots in a, you know, container and take them. I like the That's It fruit bars, Just Bare apple chips. And then, you know, everybody's always asking me about protein bars, and I've done my best to find one that's as clean as possible. I do like the little snack size perfect bars that are in the refrigerated section. And then there's one called True Bar, T-R-U-B-A-R, and then Aloha Bars. Now, all of those, like the Perfect Bars have seed oil, True Bar and Aloha have natural flavor, so we could get into all of that. But overall, that does help a lot of my clients stay on track. It helps me stay on track. Most of the time when we can eat whole foods, we're doing that. But when we need to throw something in our purse because we're running errands all day, that's what we do.
I think the grab-and-go mentality, too, is just so prevalent in our culture because we're constantly go, go, go. So kind of what you were talking about, being intentional and thinking about what you're eating and actually processing it, is probably something that could benefit all of us. Cause I know so many times it's just mindless. Mm-hmm. What's available. It doesn't matter. I just need something. I haven't eaten all day. So even some of these ideas to just put into practice in your daily life when you're running around, as busy as we all are, it can probably be very beneficial.
Absolutely. Yeah. And yeah. The protein was a big one for me, with protein shakes, because I love protein shakes. But again, you think, oh, it's a protein shake, so it's going to be healthy, and it's not. And I actually switched to Orgain because of you, one of your posts all about protein shakes. And again, like, it's this deceitful, you think in your mind, like, oh, I'm doing the right thing, when you actually really need to be focused on these ingredients. Okay, so what are your thoughts on cheat days? Because I think that one of the things that when people are trying to start a health journey, one of the things that really holds people up is like, but I don't want to deprive my body, or like, I don't want to be able to have pizza night with my kids, or like, you want to be able to find some sort of a balance. So how do you recommend people that are trying to be healthier, but that also want to maintain a balance where they don't, you know, miss out on cravings?
So I think that if you feel like you need a cheat day, that you're being too restrictive the rest of the time. And that's something that I found myself, you know, following plans that had food lists. It was like, I couldn't wait for the cheat meal. And it was almost like I had such little self-control over that meal because I felt so restricted, you know, the rest of the time. So that was the number one thing on my list when I developed my method, was to allow enough freedom that people still felt like they could live life. And in my opinion, food freedom is just as important, if not more important, than gut healing. What we don't want to fall into is being on a diet Monday through Thursday. And this is where I see a lot of women. They're good, quote unquote, good Monday through Thursday. And then Friday through Sunday, we just kind of lose it a little bit. And they gain and lose the same 5 pounds over and over. It's a total yo-yo. So with my method, I give you a budget. We buckle down, make as much progress for 12 weeks. In one of my meal plans that I will provide for client, like, I have pizza factored in on Friday night. That is, we buckle down for 12 weeks, and then we move into what we call maintenance, which this is what most Americans never find. We go from a diet to a surplus, just back and forth, and it's over and over, and we never find maintenance. And there's magic there. And when, I mean, that's probably the most rewarding part of working one-on-one with people, is that when they accomplish their goal and we get them back to like eating 2000 calories a day and maintaining their weight, I mean, it's like their mind's blown and they're like, wow, why did no one teach me this a long time ago? So I guess overall, I want you to have a little bit of a cheat every day. I want you to factor in what you love and enjoy the food that you're eating so that you can do it Sunday through Sunday.
Such a good point too about the Monday through Thursday. I feel like it's so easy to fall into that trap of just, this is when I'll be good, and then I'll splurge, and then I'll make up for it the next week. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of in this constant cycle of good on the weekdays and then bad on the weekends. And you end up fueling your body with so much bad stuff at the end of the weekend that you almost crash before mm-hmm. you have to restart.
Yeah, I always say if you can lose Monday through Thursday and then maintain on the weekend and then make some more progress Monday through Thursday. But where I see so many people fall is they'll lose a little bit Monday through Thursday, and then the caloric consumption is so high on the weekend, and just, you know, they'll do the whole 1200 calorie thing Monday through Thursday. And then, you know, the weekend is so in such a surplus that they end up gaining weight, and then it's just back and forth.
Well, we've grown up in such a diet culture that it's easy for us to continue on that never-ending wheel, because that's what has been pushed at us, mm-hmm. I think, for so long, in our parents' generation too.
Yes.
So trying to get off of that track and make it more of a lifestyle versus a diet mentality can be really difficult.
That's something that really helped me a few years ago. And like, Brandy and I are both pretty health conscious eaters. Like, we have been for a long time. It's just something that's that we're very passionate about. But my mindset really changed when I started thinking about it as a lifestyle. Mm-hmm. Like, I will not call it a diet. Like, I want to live a healthy lifestyle. But learning how to do that, I mean, we're young, and thinking about doing that for the duration of your life can sometimes feel a little daunting. But when you think about the life that you want to live and the lifestyle that you want to have, and you want health to be a part of that, I feel like it does help shift that mindset instead of like, oh, I'm on a diet.
Yes, I'm so anti that word too. And I think that mm-hmm. so many women have been lied to, and they do these 1200 calorie diets, you know, I mean, even with things like Ozempic, where we can barely eat 800 calories a day, and they think they just need to keep being good, you know, and it's like, that is killing your metabolism. And that's why, you know, so many people are struggling. But yeah, no, I could talk about that for forever.
Well, I think kind of to coincide with that healthy lifestyle is the flip side of not just eating right, but also like our workout routines and staying active. So is there any specific routines that you recommend for keeping the weight off and then maintaining as well?
So I always like workouts are not my specialty, but I am very passionate. I mean, movement is a big part of successful weight loss and balancing hormones and cortisol and gut and everything. So I think sometimes as women, we think that we have to have, you know, a dedicated 30 minutes to an hour to like work out, and really just kind of trying to change that mindset and looking at it in smaller time, like, okay, where are three 10-minute pockets in my day that I can do some sort of movement that I enjoy? Maybe it's jumping on the trampoline with the kids or riding scooters with them, or, you know, it does not have to be like going to the gym, or, you know, it doesn't have to be that all the time. If that is something that you do for mental health, then, I mean, feel free. But, you know, I would never say if I don't have 8 hours to sleep, I'm not going to sleep at all. And that's what we do with working out. We think if I don't have 30 to 60 minutes, I'm not going to do anything. And so just changing the way we think about that, changing that mindset, and what I see make a bigger difference in women's metabolism, even more than working out, is just the amount of movement that we get in our day. So, you know, a lot of us are sitting behind a desk. A lot of us now work from home. So making sure that you're getting up, getting your steps in. I always tell people to look back over the last week or two and see what your step average was, and then just make it a goal to do 1,000 to 2,000 more. So we're not going straight to, you know, from 3,000 to 10,000, but what does enjoyable movement look like just woven throughout your day? And that's going to make a much bigger difference than if you're just solely focused on, you know, trying to do, you know, gym workouts multiple days a week.
No, I think that that's such an important thing, is because I do think that people get very overwhelmed with the thought process of, oh, like if I, you know, want to lose the weight and I want to be super in shape, I have to have this super rigorous gym workout and maintain that for a long time, which I think can be a really daunting thought. And I think that people forget that a lot of it is just movement. Move mm-hmm. your body, be active. You can walk, you can find various things to do that doesn't require like, and a lot of these trendy gyms now, let's just be honest, are ridiculously expensive.
A lot of women come to me that are almost like over-exercising, like they're, yeah. they've thrown their cortisol through the roof because it's like pound it, pound it, pound it. There's never any recovery. I mean, we go straight from the workout to rushing home to get the kids to school, and we never come out of the sympathetic fight or flight nervous system. We stay in it all day long, and we were not meant to be to function that way. So then we're anxious and we're rushed and we're on edge and, you know, just one thing after another. So that is not necessarily helpful. I mean, you know, those workouts can serve a purpose, but I do think that, I mean, you know, the gyms are going to be full first of the year. And then what do they look like in March? You know, so just kind of looking at it, like I said, more of movement throughout your day. I guess I would say similar to supplements, like more is not necessarily a ton better.
I love what you said about just because I can't get 8 hours of sleep doesn't mean I'm not going to sleep. So I think in my mind, I'm like, well, if I can't get a 30-minute workout in or a 60-minute workout in, it's just not worth my time. Mm-hmm.
Right.
But I love the idea of breaking it down into segments and just giving 10 minutes here, 10 minutes there. And I think that probably prevents that fight or flight mode throughout the day. Mm-hmm. And you're just incorporating more movement, and you probably will feel better throughout the day too, because you're kind of breaking it up and not running yourself ragged right out the gate or at the end of the day, or trying to squeeze it all in or getting defeated and because you can't fit it in at all.
Right. Yes, absolutely.
Yes. Well, Emmy, those were all of the questions that we had for you, but this has been so informative. We love talking to you and love all the things that you post, and we have learned so much from you. So we know that our listeners are going to enjoy it and learn just as much from you. So if we have any listeners that want to join your program, what is the best way for them to get in contact with you?
So you can visit my website, and that is www.emmyharts, it's just HARTS nutrition.com. And I post lots of helpful resources on Instagram. My handle is emmy.hearts.np.
Perfect. And we will be sure to link all of your socials and your website as well, so that people have easy access to you.
Awesome. This was fun.
Thank you so much for being with us. And yes, please go follow her on social media, because she's so informative and you learn so much from her. So we really appreciate you sitting down today and talking with us.
Yes, and Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas. And Happy New Year. Thanks all for joining us.
Thanks, girls.